Wisdom from an unexpected place, a member of Congress. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principal Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Hey, what about it? Two new shows in a row.
We're going to start something here if we're not careful.
I'll start a trend.
Well, Chuck, I'm glad that we're kind of back in the saddle again. February seems to be a very weird month. Travel and the busyness that I have in my professional career as well. But we have some time today that we can set and look at a couple of things. And we mentioned this briefly on yesterday's program, and that was the whole idea of this sequestration that's happening in Congress because, well, let's just put it bluntly, they can't get their act together and pass a budget that would be balanced and would reduce the deficit. Because, well, let's just be, again, honest, you have too many individuals in there who want to use that money to spend in order to buy votes.
Well, absolutely, and it doesn't matter what party, whether there's an R
you
or
did,
a D.
You noticed that I did not talk about a party designation.
That's right. It has nothing to do with the party you're in. They've all learned how to play this game, and the reason that we have these continual giant deficits, now I think we're, what, $16 trillion in debt or something?
And growing. I think the next plateau we're looking at is somewhere in the neighborhood of 21 to 22 before we get to 2016.
These guys have figured out how to buy your vote. And every time they talk about quote-unquote investment, quote-unquote bringing the bacon home, creating jobs.
Stimulus.
Let's be clear about something. I had to laugh the other day before the governor's State of the State address. I heard a Democrat say he's going to come out and claim to have created all these jobs, but of course Obama actually created all these jobs. Barry, Barack Obama has not created job one. Not a single one.
Well, no, I would take umbrage with that, Chuck. He has created one job, him as permanent king.
Well, but that job was there, and now he just wants to keep continually being reelected
to it.
I mean, that job's been here since 1789.
He would just like it in perpetuity and have the right of familial succession to it. There.
But the fact is, everybody knows that private industry creates jobs. And really, folks, when you hear governors claiming this, politicians claiming they created this number of jobs, they created that number of jobs, no. The people who lived in the districts that they governed created those jobs.
That is correct.
And they're taking credit for it. They're saying, hey, look what we did. Look what we did under my watch.
Well, isn't it great somebody else does the work and you get to take all the credit for it? I mean, isn't that the political way?
Well, I can tell you as someone who is a job creator. I employ two people, myself being one. The fact is that we're not going to be creating any more jobs with the current, at least in my small corner of the world, we're not going to be creating any new jobs because we can't afford it.
That is a tragedy, but the point is that we've spent it to the point where our entire economic infrastructure is at the rupture point.
Oh, well, absolutely.
Now, for those of you out there who have bought into the Kool-Aid and cookie mixture that's being spun out there to you by the mainstream media and by some of your members of Congress, we are not in a recovery. We may have a temporary breather from the plunge down the side of the mountain, but that's only because you hit a rock, and when you slip off of it, you're going to continue to fall down the mountain.
Well, when I heard someone on the news the other day say something really stupid, and that was that we've been in a recovery since 2009.
Wow. Yeah, we're recovering from our positive economic picture.
Well, one of the things that you have to realize is that, is the unemployment picture really under 8%?
No, not the true unemployment
picture.
No,
of course it isn't, because what happens is, and this is an argument I saw Bob Beckel make the other day, talking about why Massachusetts wasn't really wasn't in that bad a condition for young people, talking about why we needed to raise the minimum wage. And it was, look, all this unemployment's really low in Massachusetts for these young people. And I'm like, whoa, 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 stop. How do we compile unemployment statistics? We compile them from the data gathered when people apply for benefits. When their benefits run out and they fall off the unemployment rolls and go on to the welfare rolls, they're no longer counted as the unemployed because they're no longer actively seeking work and seeking benefits.
That's it.
So there are how many people that have fallen? I think I read something like 30 million people who have permanently fallen off the employment rolls.
Well, Chuck, that's about 10% of the United States population.
Yeah, exactly.
That's frightening.
which means that the real unemployment rate is closer to 18 or 19%.
And honestly, if you look out there, it is. Now, the problem is, Chuck, and you mentioned this in passing, job creators don't stand a chance out there. Because every time you try to create a job or create an employment opportunity, what are you immediately faced with?
Taxes.
Well, taxes, regulations, restrictions. We're now talking, I've heard the rumors that we're talking about raising the minimum wage again to over $9 an hour.
Which is absurd, Barry, because the only person that hurts is the entry-level worker.
Exactly.
Because I know right now there are children out there. When I was a kid, I went and pushed a broom in the drugstore for 90 cents an hour.
Good for you.
And I thought that was good pay. It wasn't great pay, but it got me money that I needed to run. Try and do that now.
Well, you know, Chuck, I remember that because I came from a farm background, as you know. So I remember going out in the fields and picking up, and I know this is not PC, so for those of you who are offended, too bad. But I used to remember when we were kids, we'd go out in the fields after they'd harvest the tobacco crop and pick up the leaves that get dropped as you're cutting and moving, and then stringing those up and drying them and tying them and bundling them and taking them to the sales floor. And that's how we made our money to get things.
Made a little extra money.
Yeah, I remember it was way back. It was back in the 70s, Chuck, so it was a beanbag chair. Had to have that beanbag chair. Worked the tails off to get that beanbag chair.
Yeah, for the same ones you can buy now for about $5 in a big store.
Lot, yeah. Or something. That's right. You know, let's put it this way. You learn the value of a dollar and the inflationary value of a dollar.
It's a good thing. No, and in fact, that is real economics. Kids learn that the harder they work, you know, it used to be kids would, for instance, if they live near a golf course, would simply go to a golf course and make themselves available to caddy. You can't do that now. There are all kinds of liability issues. There are all kinds of unemployment issues. There are, if a kid did that now, people would demand that the golf course essentially take them to raise, provide all kinds of benefits and this and that. Well, guess what? Nobody's doing that job anymore. When was the last time? Now, I used to golf regularly before I hurt my back. And ask me how many times I ever used a caddy. They were available. Are you kidding? Who wants to pay somebody 30 extra bucks to haul your clubs around? Thanks, I'll do that myself.
Well, I guess if you have enough leisure time that you can go out to the course and haul around a $2,000 bag of clubs, 30 bucks to have somebody haul your clubs may not be that bad.
You like expensive clubs.
I don't know if you've ever seen my golf game. You can't build a club to make my golf game look good.
One time, you and I golfed together one time years ago for the Minutemen, if you'll recall. Yeah, we didn't do so well.
No. Putting a golf club in my hand is like putting a gun in the hand of a guy like Adam Lanza. All you're going to get is carnage.
Yes, bodies, yeah.
You're going to get bodies. And there's some good friends of mine who thought they were going to be on the body count list one day when I took a swing.
But that being said, let's think about this. It's harder and harder and harder and harder for a kid in high school to go get a job.
Because
it costs more and more and more and more and more money. Unemployment insurance, workers' compensation, which in very many cases is absolutely ridiculous. I know what I pay, and it's absurd because I will never collect that, and yet I have to pay the tax. There are regulations now regarding health care. There are regulations regarding training. You can't fire a kid very often for doing certain things. You know, in the old days, when you took a job, it was an at-will employee. Mm-hmm. And if you messed up or insulted a customer or even did something accidentally, you would lose your job.
Oh, absolutely. Well, Ohio is still considered an at-will state, except that at-will is the will of the employer to face getting sued or accused of bias or of committing a hate crime or discrimination. The list can go on and on and on. So honestly, we're really not an at-will work state anymore.
Well, no. And what are we going to do about this, Barry? Because our kids are basically becoming complete economic illiterates.
I got a great idea. Let's spend some more.
Let's spend some more money. No, it's all this idea of training.
Wait a minute. I had my congressional moment there a second. Okay, I'm coming back down to the reality of real life.
You're thinking of running for Congress, obviously.
No, I'm thinking of running away from Congress, actually, as fast as I can go.
Well, and the fact is that the state talking about investment, I've been involved in some of these programs where people were quote-unquote trained with state money. It's a joke. I mean, it is an absolute joke, except it's not funny because you know it's coming out of your pocket. Very often, companies can do exactly the same thing for a fraction of the cost without the government interference, except that under these programs, they have to hire a state-approved trainer to do the job. So therefore, they take on this extra employee, and the state says, don't worry, we'll pay for it for you. Well, we already have training personnel, thanks. We don't need somebody else on the payroll. Oh no, you need to do this. This is how our money gets wasted.
It is.
And the fact is that we'd be better off letting a kid go to a local company and say, you know, I'll sweep up in here for X number of dollars an hour.
Right.
You know, for $5 an hour, I'll sweep, I'll dust up, I'll make sure the place looks spick and span. And if you like me and I do a really good job, then we can talk about maybe increasing my pay. That's no longer an option. Now the state says, by the state, I mean the government,
not necessarily
the state of Ohio. Although some states have higher minimum wages than the federal. Massachusetts being one, and this is why Bob Beckel was bringing it up, you know, they have a higher than normal, and they have this really low unemployment. Well, again, as we said, you look at the actual percentage of kids who are working in Massachusetts, it's pretty low. And the reason it's pretty low is because the minimum wage is too high.
Well, Chuck, all we really need to do is to have Congress come to the table. They really just need to capitulate, because President Barack Obama's got all the answers for all of these problems. We can put everybody to work, according to Barack Obama, I think. Depends on what kind of work we have for them, though. Now, the kind of work that I think that he's talking about is working for the state and sweeping up bodies or doing some other things. No, but honestly, because we're talking about sequestration,
right,
and they're all crying about how horrible this is and how it's going to hurt the average American. To do what? To lower the rate in spending. And we talked about this yesterday. Sequestration isn't cutting our spending. It's cutting the rate of the growth of the spending.
Well, that's right.
But it's still positive growth. In other words, we're still spending more.
Do you remember in the 1980s, this went on, Reagan with the quote-unquote budget cuts, which weren't really budget cuts at all?
No, of course not.
What they were was a reduction in the growth of increase of those budgets. And the Democrats howled, and the news media came out and played the game and said, you're cutting the budget. Yes, we're cutting the budget. We're cutting the increases in the budget down to a manageable level. My only complaint about that period, one of my major complaints was nobody took on the fact and fought the fight and went on the Sunday shows and said, don't bring it to me in that language. I'm not answering that question. This is not a budget cut. It's a cut in the rate of growth. And my real complaint is we didn't really cut government during the 80s. Everybody thinks we did. The Consolidated Federal Register got bigger and more regulation came in during the 80s. Don't kid yourself. Ronald Reagan did not end regulatory growth.
Let's also not kid ourselves. Contrary to his public statements the other night, John Kasich really didn't balance the federal budget.
Oh, of course not. You mean the state budget?
No, the federal budget.
Well, I'm sorry, you're right.
When he was the chairman of the Appropriations Committee in Congress, everybody seems to believe that he balanced that federal budget. Well, the only way you can do that the way he did it was to push payments off into the future and take agencies that you can't do that with offline, off the general revenue fund.
Well, here's how he did it too, Barry. Not only did he take that stuff offline, but he got the votes to get it passed by trading a vote to kill the Second Amendment. Don't kid yourself. John Kasich will do anything to make it look like he is balancing the budget. And I do mean, from his record, anything.
Yeah, you're right. We need to have some people in Congress who, honestly, they have a good idea. They have some wisdom about this. And I think you've got an audio clip that we wanted to play for people. But we're out of time. So we're going to have to wait until either tomorrow on our Saturday program or Monday for us to get to that clip.
Yeah, because we do need to discuss this, but we have about a minute left or maybe less than a minute. Well, so it's not going to fly.
I'm glad somebody takes care of the clock.
We could speed it up 4x, I guess, and it would sound a little funny, but we can get through it.
Oh, well, that's perfectly fine. But when it gets right down to it, though, Charles, is we're going to hear a lot over the next few weeks about how horrible it's going to be if we allow this process to move forward. The big problem is, if we don't let this process move forward, or we capitulate and cave, or as Barack Obama says, compromise,
yeah,
we are going to end up in a deeper hole than we have been in the past. The only thing that will solve this problem, Chuck, is what's called zero-based budget. And that's where we go back to a baseline years before this year and say, those are the numbers we're going to work with. That's your cap right there. So you figure out, each agency, you figure out how you're going to meet it underneath this cap of spending, and then we're going to go from there. And then each year, we reduce it by 1%.
And with that, we're out of time. Join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.